Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, college football fans across the nation and around the world, especially around the greater Midwest. This is Tim May with the Tim May Podcast. The reason I said that about the Midwest is my co-pilot this week. He doesn't even know he's a co-pilot yet. He's never flown on this airplane. I hope he knows which buttons to push. But Patrick Engel from blueandgold.com, part of the on3.com empire. Welcome to the Tim May Podcast for the first time.
Thanks for having me, Tim. I'm excited.
And by the way, ladies and gentlemen, blue and gold, that's short for Notre Dame, or is it the Notre Dame? Which is it, Patrick?
Yeah, I don't think Notre Dame is going to be filing that. Notre Dame. Yeah, no, that's.
You can say it's stupid. That's okay. You can say it's stupid. I'm saying it's stupid. I've been trying to put that on my Twitter timeline at least once a day, just to see what happens. But I digress, man. The reason I got you on, I explained it before we started here. Boy, this Ohio State Notre Dame have played so few times, in history. But Notre Dame's had a hard time catching up to Ohio State the last many times they've played in history. But this one is shaping up the season opener for 2022. Every day, it seems like there's something new being stirred into this pot here, this bouillabaisse. It's going to be this renewal of what should have been a yearly rivalry, but it's just comes and goes. We all know it started in 1935 and 36 when Notre Dame swept the game at Ohio Stadium and at Notre Dame Stadium. And I think since then, for the most part, Ohio State's kind of held its way in the on-again, off-again situation. But now, all of a sudden, here's Marcus Freeman, a guy I've known since he was 17 years old, a fellow that played football at Ohio State, was a linebacker of great repute. Suddenly he's the head coach at Notre Dame, and man, this battle has been joined. It does have a little bit of a different feel to it, doesn't it, Patrick?
Yeah, especially after, getting some interesting June fodder with Marcus Freeman last week. I'm sure it got some folks up in arms around Columbus and everything. But hey, if nothing else, it's more juice for a game that, certainly doesn't lack it on its own. But, the more you can add to the suspense, the hype, the excitement, whatever it might be, the better for, what's probably one of the.
Yeah, this reminds me more of like NASCAR pit stops where they come in. They just got fuel about 10 laps ago, but they're trying to pack more fuel in there, this needs no more fuel. But you're right. I mean, with Marcus, it was like, that's not what I said. Well, that's what I said, but it's not what I meant. Well, wait a minute. That's what I meant, but that's not what I really meant. It was kind of an interesting situation because clearly, we've been through this before with other people. And same way when a guy leaves Ohio State, you got Al Washington Jr. sitting up there, at Notre Dame. I mean, you're now selling Notre Dame, just like when you show up at Ohio State, you've been an assistant coach. Like Al Washington Jr., for example, was at Michigan. He was then selling Ohio State. So, it is what it is in that regard, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And, I no matter when you – if you read the initial quote from Freeman in the CBS piece and then listened to the full thing he said on the radio with old teammate Bobby Carpenter, definitely a strategic play to pick when and where to go make those clarifications there. But – when you look at both of those, sure, I think he's, insinuating, implying something or whatever. But at the same time, like, this is something in what he's touching on as far as academic rigor and academic, potential or whatever you want to call it, is something the Notre Dame head coach should be leaning into when we've heard him really lean into and probably more than Brian Kelly did. And from the perspective of what Freeman's trying to do and what he's trying to sell, that's probably a good thing, even if, the phrasing or, way he put that maybe could have been a little better, but at the same time, not really sure it was anything that was, nothing you shouldn't be leaning into or anything that was gravely offensive in a sense.
Yeah, not malicious. He was basically selling Notre Dame is what he's doing. I mean, and it's totally understandable. Like I said, I've known him since he was 17. I've always liked Marcus Freeman a lot, man. He's one of those quality individuals. He was an interesting guy as a player and even as an assistant coach. He wasn't really what I'd call super vocal with the media, but he was always interesting to talk to. You follow what I'm saying there, you know, not really a me guy. It was always about the team, et cetera. So I'm really looking forward to this for this game, and that just adds to it. You know, it is interesting because a lot of people thought the way things worked out there that it could have been Luke Fickell being the head coach there if Notre Dame had waited another month. But instead, it was his top assistant from the year before who ends up getting the job. And, you know, I'm just curious, how was that taken by Notre Dame fans or by you guys who, you know, cover Notre Dame, the media, making a guy who's never been a head coach before the head coach of one of the premier programs in the country, you know, and all that means?
Yeah, it's definitely I don't think it's lost on anyone in the fan base or among us, you know, folks who are around the team, that it's a gigantic gamble in the sense that he was a Power Five defensive coordinator for 1 year. And well, I guess if you want to count co-DC at Purdue for a year, you can, but that wasn't exactly anything that I don't think he's going to be highlighting on his resume that year.
No.
That were particularly good. But I think there's a sense of like, you know, it's and this among the fans too, and among us beat writer folks, that sure, it's a risk, but it's a bigger risk not to do it because of what he was able to show you in a year here. And even back in the previous 10 years at that point as a coach before he got hired as DC here, of how he relates to guys, how he can get the most out of guys, what he can do recruiting wise to elevate this is like continue trying to reach the summit that, you know, the Alabamas and the Georgias and Ohio States keep raising that.
Yeah.
I think it's been, and I think this is really what you've seen in the last 7 months, is that there's the idea with him that there's a path to a ceiling that's probably higher than where Kelly had it. And that's a risk to pass on, even if you're acknowledging, yeah, this could go a lot wrong and all the stability and the consistency that Brian Kelly had built up here in the last 5 years could go bottom out. And then you're back stuck where you were when you had to hire Kelly to clean it up in 2010. But yeah. I think at least it's in a spot to be able to take that chance. And given how Freeman has understood the place and kind of gotten what to sell, like we touched about, he's selling Notre Dame there. And part of that is leaning into the academics as a positive instead of a, you know, a hindrance. So I think when you look at all of that between how he's grasped the place in a pretty short amount of time from being an outsider, like not someone who grew up here or went here or coached here before, and then the ability to show that there's a path forward, a higher level to go to in recruiting, that they've been able to at least seemingly be on the right track toward and building this 2023 class. Like, I think that's the upside that you were looking to find when you hired Freeman. And obviously we have no idea how it's going to go on the field. Like, he can't win a game in April or May, but so far I think is, you know, as cliche as the honeymoon phase and excitement can be and contrived or whatever, like, I think there's been some validation as much as there can be in this time among the fans of like this.
I agree. I mean, move. Second half of that game with Oklahoma State notwithstanding, right?
exactly. And yeah. I think people are willing to look past, or maybe not look past, but acknowledge some of the like general situation with that, even if it's something like, yeah, a reminder that he's still a first-time head coach.
I'm not sure he had his full staff in place at that point either, right? I mean, that's, you know, all kinds of things there, but I wanted to touch with you. I mean, in that regard, it's interesting because I mean, I've been around for a long time. Tom Clements still haunts my dreams because I grew up an Alabama fan, moved to Texas when I was 11, but you know, moved up here in 1976 to go to the Ohio State University. I wonder if I get any money for that.
Careful for copyright infringement here.
You know, seriously, if you say the Ohio State University, you're promoting the. I should get some NIL money from that, the way I'm looking at it. So I'm going to look into that after we're done, Patrick. But the bottom line is, I remember Notre Dame, you know, has made, like a lot of schools, has made some, as you look back on them in retrospect, some big mistakes from a hiring standpoint. Jerry Faust comes immediately to mind, went from Cincinnati Moeller High School to Notre Dame as a head coach. Things did not work out. Ty Willingham, things really did not work out. I thought Brian Kelly, for example, like you said, and what I'm leaning to here is kind of an interesting thing I've read into this over the last 7 months, the way you've been, the way you put it all together there. I think Brian Kelly got them to a certain level. And I think that he got them back on definitely the major major stage nationally. But it just seemed like he hit a ceiling there. And I don't know if you agree with that or not, but, you know, to get to that next level, what just Marcus Freeman has done in the last several months recruiting is evidence that maybe that change needed to be made, you know, because what sets Ohio State and Alabama and Georgia and Clemson for the most part apart right now is recruiting that top level athlete on a big time consensus scale. And do you see a glimmer there that tells you, well, at least in that regard, maybe Notre Dame has gotten it right?
Yeah, I think that's part of the ceiling, like I talked about, of like, all right, showing the fan base that even if this is a giant risk, that who knows, we might look up in 2 years and see this is closer to a Jerry Faust repeat based on on-field results, that despite that dice roll a little bit, there's a level that Freeman as a recruiter can take them as far as talent acquisition, which we know this is really what it comes down to.
Yes.
That Kelly and that structure probably wasn't going to quite go to, even though they had just signed a top 10 class that 2022 that was largely assembled before he left for LSU.
Yes.
And I think why there was a little bit of like baseline kind of always existing antsiness, consternation, whatever you might want to call it, even with going 54-9 in Kelly's last 5 years, even with making the playoff twice, and just the kind of the idea of like, is it going to get any better than this? And even though it seems like a dumb question to ask, considering there's probably 125 other FBS teams that would kill to be in that spot at all, this is a place that still measures itself on wanting to win national titles. And that's the standard and it's nothing else. And that's what the fan base is used to and going to hold them to. And I don't, even if it's been, you know, since 1988, since they last won one, I think that's still the measure of what it's going to be. And I think just to kind of slow acknowledgement that maybe that wasn't really gonna, like, there wasn't really anything to cling to even in those really strong 5 years that it could get up to that kind of summit. And that I think Freeman's given him a couple of things of at least hope of like, this class that right now is number two was number one until Ohio State just rolled in three top 50 receivers in the class and passed him there. But in then 2024, early on, number one in the on-three team rankings. Like,
yeah,
that's the kind of talent acquisition that I think they've been really wanting to see. And that even if, you know, recruiting had taken a little bit better of a step in the last couple of years under Kelly, probably wasn't going to be at that height in any kind of consistent manner as far as top five classes more often than not. And yeah, that's been the biggest win of the honeymoon first off season. And really that was the biggest thing he could win at, is proving like, right away before he even coaches a game, he can take this recruiting thing to a higher level as far as and get just more depth of elite, higher end top 100 talent in here. And I think he's been able to do that.
Dude, it's got to give Notre Dame fans though a great feeling to know that right now Notre Dame's rated ahead of LSU in recruiting, doesn't it? And that's why Brian Kelly went to LSU's, because now he can get those real players, those few guys he was missing. I mean, you got to be, a lot of people got to be sitting up there and just laughing, right?
Oh, the shade and freedom on the fan base in that regard particularly is, you know, it could fuel a rocket ship. So
yeah, we got a lot of fuel floating around here, man. Well, you know what? And with the price of gasoline being what it is, you and I ought to jump right into that market, that commodities market. Hey, last couple of things before we move on. What's the biggest thing that Notre Dame that Marcus Freeman and his staff, which includes James Laurinaitis now, is what, a graduate assistant?
That's right.
Yeah. Interesting there, too. I mean, James, man, one of the great players ever played at Ohio State, just like Marcus. What is the biggest thing they've got to get done before September the 3rd from a just a football team standpoint to be basically to have a shot in Ohio Stadium?
Yeah, it really comes down to what does the offense with quarterback Tyler Buchner look like in fall camp, and can it inspire some kind of feeling of this can be an explosive unit that can at least hang with and put some kind of game pressure on Ohio State or really any team. Like it's even, I'd be saying the same thing if they were opening up with USC instead of closing with USC. That's really what it is, where Buchner was a top 100 consensus recruit in the 21 cycle, even though he only played 13 games of high school football because of California didn't have a season due to COVID. He tore an ACL, but really, really intriguing ceiling for him all throughout that. And that one you saw a little bit last year when he kind of surprisingly played in 10 games as a freshman as kind of a change of pace QB. Yeah. Saw a lot of upside with him as a really high level athlete, really good runner, but some inconsistencies throwing the ball that maybe you would have expected for a guy with that little experience. But how much he can progress in that area as far as making reads, being comfortable, being more consistently accurate, being able to get some zip on making all the throws. As much progress as he can make in those areas in this offseason is really going to be kind of the key of, is the offense a good unit that can pour on points against, you know, whatever defenses, but you know, won't be quite enough to win a shootout if you have to do it. And, you know, in this age of college football, you're going to have to win one of those at least once or twice a year. So that's really it. And I think spring practice was a good sign that he's getting or progressing toward an area where he can be a pretty reliable quarterback that helps a team win, where it's not, you know, winning because he just moves him down the field or winning in spite of him or anything like that, but he's making it happen. And you saw a lot more consistency as a passer, a lot more comfort in the offense, just kind of letting things come to him. So we'll see how he continues to build off of that in the fall, but you want to see kind of a consistent, you know, as linear as you can reasonably expect path from him, from, you know, raw, intriguing, kind of change of pace QB to legitimate starter who can pilot a good offense and score some points when you need to and be able to win a shootout.
When you have the ball, go score touchdowns. That's the key anymore to really be competitive big time at the top level of major college football. The defense is so hamstrung in a lot of ways. And the guys who still can't hang on to that ball control kind of mentality, even though they are spreading the field and stuff, they're going to become dinosaurs pretty quick. Marcus Freeman, I don't think, is a dinosaur. And like you said, I think he's got his staff in place now. We'll see what happens there. I want to get your take on this, though. Like you just pointed out a while ago, the thing that stands out to me about Notre Dame is more and more Notre Dame and Ohio State are recruiting the same guys, you know, and that just shows that, and it hadn't always been that way. Maybe the occasional guy, but they're not rubbing elbows. They're throwing elbows, right? From a recruiting standpoint, you can see that from where you are, right?
Absolutely. And that's another thing that I think is kind of given the fan base a little bit more energy there and kind of helped them buy into that recruiting ceiling, where it's not like, oh yeah, okay, Ohio State offered a kid. Well, all right, now not nice knowing you, or you know, you just don't have any expectation of beating them out. It's one where, you know, they can at least land a couple of haymakers, even though, yeah, they would have loved to have gotten Carnell Tate, who just committed to Ohio State. And
yeah,
I don't really think it had been trending well for Notre Dame for a little while there. But yeah, you know, even in this 23 class alone, Brennan Vernon, a guy that, you know, Ohio State was pursuing last year from Ohio, who committed to Notre Dame there. I know he's not exactly top of board at receiver considering the four guys they have in the class, but Rico Flores in this class, another top 150 guy out of California, who's slated to visit Ohio State. And, you know, there's at least enough interest there. And that's probably, I think, a good sign for Notre Dame that, you know, you're targeting that kid and right now seem like the favorite to get him when he announces that next month, I should say.
Yeah.
So the more you see those kind of battles of, you know, Ohio State on the offer sheet or Alabama on the offer sheet or Georgia and ones they're winning, I think that's a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. But it also piques this rivalry, man. You know, like I said, this on again, long off again, on again rivalry is picked up steam in that regard. You, from your vantage point, you're sitting out there, you know, you keep up with a lot of stuff, and contribute greatly to the on3.com cause, you know, from your blueandgold.com spot. But just what's your take on Ohio State right now? What if you had to summarize what Ohio State is all about, you know, from a recruiting standpoint and just from a powerhouse standpoint, how would you explain it to people?
Yeah, from my outsiders, but college football reporters' perspective, it just seems like this has been the place that's cultivated like the most competitive, talent rich kind of situation as you'll find anywhere, where it's like there's no off days, no anything, where every kid that walks in there is competing with, you know, 10 other top 100 recruits, or, you know, you have, like, if you have one bad game, you're kind of sweating it because, you know, the fans will be clamoring for the next five-star who's a freshman or who wants to get the chance there. So,
oh yeah.
That kind of, when you can create that kind of situation where you're lining up those guys who are coming in just to want to get a chance to be part of that, I think that's a pretty, pretty enviable situation to have there, because they see the pro track record development and the contending for national titles every year. And I imagine some of the speed bumps they've hit on defense the last couple of years have been kind of sore spots for the fan base. But, you know, like I mentioned, Notre Dame's 5-year run would be great for, you know, 125 other teams would like that. I think maybe 128 would like to be where Ohio State is. And ultimately, I think they're one of the three or four teams you kind of look at and say, like, all right, these are the ones that are just kind of continually raising the summit of where you kind of have to get if you want to join that group and try to win a title or legitimately compete for it instead of just going to the playoff and, you know, hey, nice to see you. And, you know, you're out of there in the semis with a 20-point loss. So, yeah, if I had to sum it up, there's only a handful of maybe three or four teams that have that power and are at the center of continuing to push the summit upward. And I'd say that they're one of them.
Is Ohio State now seeing, you know, Ohio State under Woody Hayes, the world famous 3 yards in a cloud of dust offense that he perpetrated there for decades. Is Ohio State now seen from your vantage point as just a top level passing offense? I mean, you know, just give me your view from that vantage, because they led the nation last year in total offense. And yet I thought we're average running the ball, below average running the ball against maybe a couple of the really good defenses they face. I think anybody can look at statistics and see that. But is it seen as just like this aerial circus? What's the perception?
Yeah, you know, aerial circus might be almost like sounding like it's a, you know, kind of a mess, but no, I don't think it's, you know, a mess at all. It's, you look at the collection of QBs that they've brought in, where what is it? Not Jack Miller, Kyle McCord. Sorry, borderline 5-star, if not a 5-star in the 21 class, is like
right
an afterthought now, because you think of going Stroud for another year, and then, all right, they've already got Rayola, and that's kind of the next big thing where it's, all right, it's a pretty nice luxury to have a borderline 5-star QB that's just like doesn't even get that much excitement because of who's there now and who's coming in after him.
Yeah.
But yeah, and then you look at the collection of receivers that they've had. And, you know, I know Utah was down bunch of defensive backs and kind of struggling through that Rose Bowl, but look, anybody who can put up 347 yards like Jackson Smith and Jigba did, like, that's not a fluke as far as talent. And that doesn't happen if you're not doing a lot of things right as far as passing offense, passing design, being able just to get your best players the ball consistently. I think they've been pretty adept at being able to do that over the years. So yeah, absolutely. I mean, you look at kind of Oklahoma under Lincoln Riley, so now USC under Lincoln Riley, and Ohio State under Ryan Day and Kevin Wilson, is like, these are the kind of premier offensive operations here, especially right. passing offense operations. And it's just like, you don't really ever have a chance to think, oh yeah, we're going to hold them to 10 points. It's all right, maybe we keep them under 30 and let's hope we score 35.
Yeah, I said last year, if you get to 35, you've got a shot at beating Ohio State. That was last year. Now, I'm not sure. I think this offense could be much better, because I think the running game is going to be much better, which is going to be interesting. But like you mentioned, Kevin Wilson, you know, I mean, former head coach at Indiana, before that, the offensive coordinator at Oklahoma, you know, but all these minds, Brian Hartline, You know, what is the perception of Brian Hartline, the wide receiver coach out there now? And, you know, he's now the part and parcel of the passing game, too, in terms of his design. But he's a guy that's turned down a lot of offers to go a lot of other places, including back to the NFL as a coach and stuff. But the proof's in the pudding, right, with the guys they've just announced.
100%. I think it's kind of hard to look at anybody else right now as the best to currently be coaching receivers in college football with, and being able to recruit them this week being kind of proof in the pudding right there. So and that's not really a surprise that he's been pretty selective about where he wants that next move to be. Cause you know, the more he keeps this up, the more you think of, the higher next step you can take is, and that, there's not going to be too many of those next steps that are unattainable for him. The more he keeps staying here, keeps developing guys, and keeps having a strong hand in, probably the best receiver situation of the last 2-3 years, that something that you don't really think is going to stop. So from a Notre Dame fan standpoint in particular, in the interactions you have with the fan base on the message boards and everything, like, I think they're particularly envious of it just because of how that position has been kind of a problem area, weak spot at times for Notre Dame, where right now they have 8 scholarship receivers after signing just one last year. And one of those guys is a walk-on last year that got a scholarship as a graduate, and still kind of a spot that gives you some concern this year. And especially when you have to play Ohio State and USC and presumably keep up with both of those teams. So yeah, I know Notre Dame fans in particular are very, very envious of what Brian Hartline has going with Ohio State's receiver room right now.
Hey, last thing, Patrick, I get this question all the time. So I'm going to ask you. Even got this question on the radio a little while ago when I was doing a little radio hit with somebody. Is this a bigger game for Ohio State or Notre Dame? A more important game for Ohio State or Notre Dame on September the 3rd? I hate that kind of question because it's obviously huge for both. Ohio State, I think, is perceived. I'm going to kind of give you part of your answer. You may not agree with me. Ohio State is kind of perceived as being, I think, a little bit ahead of the game in terms of its offense, in terms of the changes it's made with Jim Knowles on the defensive side. Reminds me of 2019 when Jeff Hafley came in from the San Francisco 49ers and like that changed the defense. You just get the sense that there's a lot of talent there. It just needed a new direction and stuff. Meanwhile, Notre Dame clearly has made a coaching change because their one guy left, but clearly Marcus Freeman's a first-year head coach. There will always be learning pains no matter how you put it all together and stuff. And like we pointed out, Notre Dame is still maybe in a little bit of flux offensively into how good it's going to be, in its new under the new regime and with basically a new full-time starting quarterback. But just so answer that question. I mean, is there a right answer that it's more important for one team than it is the other?
I don't know if there's a right answer or even a clear answer.
Yeah, by the way.
Right. It is actually a really good question just because of the stakes are meaningful for both of them. Where Ohio State, it's like if you come and are able to handle this and especially do it with some kind of convincing manner, like I think that's a pretty good early statement that like this is one of those teams that actually can get back to the 2014 heights instead of, whatever it's been since then. If it's a run game that doesn't quite function, a defense that kind of springs too many leaks, like those kind of obstacles and whatever else it might've been in between there that stopped them short of that either in the playoff or in a random game against a big time West team. Like if you're able to see the strides that Jim Knowles can make on defense, which I'm a buyer and based on what he was able to do at Oklahoma State and having seen what Oklahoma State did last year before the Fiesta Bowl. And then the collection of offensive skill position talent that they have that's just bordering on unguardable, like that all sounds like a good mix. But to see it against a team that's going to be in the preseason top 10, maybe the top 5, like I think that'd be quite a statement of like, yeah, there's not a glaring weakness per se, or at least as big of a weakness like a run game was last year in 2018, I think it was, or a defense was in 2020 or even parts of last year. But for Notre Dame, like I don't know that it's one of those things where this game has to be a referendum on what Freeman is going to be, or even what Tyler Buckner is going to be, or even what the secondary that is kind of a problem spot last year, which not exactly what you want to have going into an opener against Ohio State. Is that going to, like, you can have a good secondary that gets toasted by Ohio State's receivers. Like, it just happens. Like, Utah was good last year until they ran into that and, you know, lost some corners to attrition and whatnot. But
yeah,
I think the bigger thing for Notre Dame in that is you're going to get a chance to see right away how much room you have to make up, how much ground you got to continue climbing to get to that summit of college football that you bet on Marcus Freeman being able to take you to. So I don't know that whatever the result is, let's say it's, you know, a loss, like, I don't know that that's going to be a thing of, oh, well, he can't get him there. But, you know, I think there's definitely a chance you're leaving that game with, you know, Notre Dame losing by a couple of touchdowns and saying, well, here's where we know exactly what the biggest steps are and just how much of a gap there is and where what has to kind of close in there and what you got to do to make it up to get to that kind of spot. It's probably the best way to put it is it's a measuring stick game. And I think there's a lot of value in that. And long-term, as far as, all right, it gives you right away one game, a sense of exactly the things you have to continue to keep adding, keep developing, keep strengthening, keep closing to try to get closer to that summit that seemingly keeps raising every year. So a lot of value in that. So maybe because of that, you know, I'd say Notre Dame, but then again, like, you know, if you're Ohio State coming in as preseason number two at worst, probably, yeah, really thinking national title, really feeling good about the tweaks you made on defense, really feeling good about how potentially potent the offense can be. Yeah, it is a big deal for as far as adding a potentially big win on the resume there. So, yeah, I think it's really important for both of them, honestly. And I'm not sure there's an obvious one or the other there.
Yeah. Well, it's going to have ramifications one way or the other. It's a great college football opener. You agree with that, right? I mean, wow. Yeah,
absolutely. Right? These are the kind of openers on campus, two storied teams, all that.
Yeah.
That you want to see every single year. And not, you know, in a football, the NFL dome or whatever, where, you know, you might have upper deck seats empty. No.
Yeah.
Put it on campus, do these home and homes. This is exactly the kind of thing you want to see on opening weekend in every year.
Ladies and gentlemen, Patrick Engel from blueandgold.com. It's blueandgold.com, right? Do I have that right?
That's right.
And, of course, a part of the on3.com empire. You like the way I say that?
Absolutely. That's what we're building.
Patrick Engel, thanks for joining the Tim May podcast, my man, and I will see you September the 3rd for sure.
Looking forward to it, Tim. Thanks.
And, ladies and gentlemen, until next week, this is the Tim May podcast. We'll see you then.
With the Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.